I'm Ed Rose, and this is Citizen Kane, PA. This week's program is called Kane's Snow Trains, Part 2. Last week, we heard the story about the huge success of Kane's inaugural snow train in February of 1936, when 350 Pittsburghers made the trip to the hilltop and locals and guests from neighboring towns went all out for winter sports. Newspaper reports went so far as to say that 10,000 people caused a traffic jam on the JoJo Road to watch ski jumping at Cedar Farms. Today we'll hear more about that story and of the time when Kane made a bid to be a hub for skiing, skating, and sledding that town fathers wishfully hoped would one day rival Lake Placid. The second train on Sunday, February 17, 1936, attracted 250 Pittsburghers, and the Kane Republican reported that a throng of over 4,000 winter enthusiasts came to the hilltop despite the most unfavorable snow conditions of the winter. Organizers were convinced that hosting the gala on a Sunday held down attendance from Pittsburgh, and poor snow conditions did not help matters, as the original plan for weekly trains was called into question. Radio station WJAS reported that Kaufman's decided to end its train runs for the season and called Kane the state's most famous year-round resort. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette referred to Kane as the state's winter sports capital. Local residents, when surveyed about Kane's viability as a home to hockey, were quick to comment. Francis Aljo declared that there weren't enough men in town who could skate well enough to put six men on the ice. Ed Wallace stated that there's too much snow. When we used to skate on the park pond, we had to scrape it every day. It would take time and money. During the 1930s, town residents got behind a plan to dam up the spring at Southover Park and use the pond as a swimming pool and as an ice rink in the winter. Sufficient funds were raised through charitable events, and a first-rate facility was constructed. Kane High, under the coaching of Dutch Uselaner, took the helm, and 22 students tried out for the hockey club. Practices were on the park pond, and games were scheduled for Southover. Games were often against independent teams, as there was an overall lack of interest among high schools of the region. Following the advent of Twin Lakes, coupled by sanitation problems, the Southover pool and rink were abandoned in the 1940s. The dam was blasted away in 1947 when it was held out as a menace to children. Crystal Springs, owned by W.R. James, just north of James City, was an important private winter venue, hosting skiing and skating events during the snow train days. Crystal Springs was also home to an ice rink that hosted hockey games featuring mostly out-of-town teams into the 1940s. Jarvis Rockwell organized additional snow trains in 1937 as snow and bitter cold gave winter enthusiasts all that they bargained for in December of that year. Big Gusty, Little Gusty, and Cedar Farm Slopes were all open for business. KDKA Radio did a sketch and told of winter adventures in Kane in music and in dialogue, creating a romantic vision of winter fun on the hilltop. By February of 1938, more than a half dozen other resorts in the state featured skiing and followed Kane's foray into the winter sports business. Winter carnivals became all the rage in the Poconos, Cook's Forest, Altoona, the Lehigh Valley, and in Myersdale's Deer Valley. Snow trains were also introduced in Baltimore and Cleveland and in Washington, D.C., spelling the beginning of the end of Kane's dreams as the state's winter capital. Well, that's all for this week, friends. Please be sure to listen in next week for more on the story of the snow trains to Kane. Please send your comments and story ideas to citizenkanepa@gmail.com. And thank you for listening.